If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where hallelujah, the preseason is over, the regular season is here, and the Lakers are here. Real Lakers basketball. Unfortunately, I don't really know what real Lakers basketball is, but ready or not, here we come. Alan, what did you think about the Lakers tonight? We're going to bookend this preseason. The Lakers ended 2-for-5, is that right?
Yeah, they won their first two, and then they lost the next five.
Yeah, so it wasn't that impressive, but overall, you know, wins and losses don't matter here. The Lakers lost to the Suns tonight, 98-94, and then the game before that, they lost to Golden State, 112-123. So, yeah, it was very uneven game tonight. We're just going to try and do an overarching kind of general vague thing because today we actually have a previous recording that we did with Chris Axman from the Almighty Ballers podcast network. Me, Alan, and Tommy joined his show the other night to just talk about the overarching themes of the Lakers offseason and what we're looking forward to with regards to the young core heading into this next season. So I think that's a good way to start the regular season, don't you think, Alan?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, before we get to that, though, obviously we'll recap what we just saw out of the, I guess it was lit, but it was like lit garbage, if you know what I mean.
Yes, that's a perfect way to describe it.
So I don't know what we saw tonight, dude. This Suns-Lakers game kind of felt like senioritis mode.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, the lights at the end of the tunnel, everyone's just ready to move on to the next thing. So it was very sloppy.
Yeah, so speaking of sloppy, I forgot to even call out our Twitter handle and everything. So before we get started, once again, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes because the more you rate and review us, the more times E.G. and Leanne's name will actually be called this season as opposed to him being referred to simply as The Contract. Which, unfortunately, I think...
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I think The Contract will win out. And I'm not even sure if people want to rate and review to have E.G. and Leanne's name called out. But regardless, please rate and review us on iTunes. And also, if I could ask a favor to all of our listeners, I'd really love it if whenever we post our podcast on Twitter that you guys would retweet that instead of just liking it. Liking it is great, but I think retweet gets us the most exposure because then all of your followers get to see it, yada yada. So we'd really appreciate it if you guys would retweet the Twitter link that we post when we post our episodes. So yeah, at Lakers Legacy Pod. And also, once again, you can email us at thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. With all that housekeeping out of the way, let's quickly get into... First, let's get into Brandon Ingram, because that was the highlight of the Golden State Warriors game, and we haven't touched upon it yet. But, Alan, what did you think of Brandon Ingram's breakout game against Golden State, where he had 21 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals?
He was great. He had a really good all-around game, and the big difference there was him handling the ball, bringing it up as a point guard. You know, a lot of people either don't know or tend to forget that he went through a major growth spurt when he was in high school. So I'm not exactly sure what his height was, you know, as a sophomore or a junior in high school, but he was significantly shorter than he is now. So he has a lot of ball handling skills. He has that point guard intuition. If you want to compare him kind of like Anthony Davis, where again, he has guard skills for a bigger guy. Yep. I think that really helped him get into the flow of the offense, and Luke definitely touched upon that in his post-game remarks, saying that he noticed in Summer League, actually, that when he was running the show, he seemed a lot more engaged, and the offense flowed very well, too. So,
yeah,
loved it.
Yeah, for me, it was the point Ingram, point forward play that really got Ingram's juices flowing. And then from there, he was just much more aggressive with every single move he took. And then Something that I saw in his last game in Summer League, which I got to see live, where he also had like 21 points and was hitting all these crazy turnaround jump shots and whatnot, was that he did this in Duke as well. He just hasn't shown it as much, obviously, in the NBA with the bigger dudes. But something Ingram's really good at is taking these awkward-looking shots that you won't think will fall. But because he has such a soft touch and because he's so long, he's able to hit them. For example, there was that shot in the fourth quarter where I forgot who Golden State's big man was, but Golden State's big man pretty much cut him off at the baseline. And Brandon Ingram ended up taking this weird-looking Marcelo Huertas one-footed jumper. And it looked like he collected his dribble off the ground, but still was able to double clutch hit it from the baseline. So that was one of the examples where it was like a contorting shot. But I think Brandon Ingram can kind of do that. You know how we talked about Julius Randle and how he just takes ugly shots and maybe that's just the type of player he is?
Yeah.
Ingram, I think, can actually make those shots at a consistent level.
He's more under control.
Yeah, even if it looks like it's kind of all over the place, he's able to regain control at the very last second. Also because he just has a really good touch on his jump shot. And when he has the proper arc and it's coming off of his fingertips, it's very soft. And it was very pure the other night against Golden State. You know, he was 7 for 10, 2 for 3 from 3, even hit his free throws, 5 for 6. So he just had it flowing in every single aspect, had zero turnovers. Obviously, the most impressive part was him also being able to play make and get assists in transition, hitting Swaggy P for the open three in transition, hitting other guys in the offense. So I thought he was very controlled, and he had that one play against Iguodala where he literally did some shake and bake stuff and actually took him into the key, and it looked like Iguodala cut him off, but it didn't matter. He still faded away, and because he's so tall, he got the ball to kind of roll in there, and that's the Ingram that I saw at Duke, you know?
Yeah. You know, Anton Jameson on Spectrum Sportsnet actually had a good comparison. He actually compared him to himself a little bit because Anton had a pretty unorthodox style, right? He would kind of bring the ball down to his hip and then shoot it, and everything looked weird up until he got to his set position. And then when he shot it, you know, if you just saw that, everything looked fine.
Right.
He also compared him a little bit to Grant Hill.
Interesting.
So I can see that comparison as well. You know, Grant Hill, like pre-ankle injuries and all that stuff, as far as being a really lanky guy, yet being pretty strong, and then and also having that ability to get his own shot under some difficult circumstances. So, yeah, I like those two new comparisons, I would say.
Yeah, so I think I like that Brandon Ingram can hit those tough shots, but I think the majority of what we'll see from Brandon Ingram is just very controlled, composed, fundamental type of play. And we saw that with his first shot on the baseline, right? Where he was open for three, pump fake, the guy flew away, took an easy dribble in, hit the jump shot.
Yeah,
very simple, methodical. Very fluid. Yes.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I think that's the majority of what we're going to see him this year. But it's good to know that if he needs to take it up another notch and another level, that he can actually take his man off and hit contorting, fading away shots, which is what he did as well in the Golden State game. So that was great overall. To sum up that game, Nick Young was hot, 19 points, 5 of 10 from 3. He played amazing. He actually bodied up Klay Thompson. What's it called? Luke Walton pretty much credited him for once he stuck him on Klay Thompson. Klay was having fits with him. So Swaggy P, just overall an amazing cap to his preseason, obviously. Julius Randle, very up and down as he has been the last few games. 12 points, 5 rebounds, but 4 turnovers. Lack of spacing once again in the starting lineup is causing problems. Jordan Clarkson, so I actually haven't been impressed with him these last two games. It's kind of felt like ISO ball Jordan Clarkson all of a sudden, and I don't know why that's happening, but he had four assists tonight, but it didn't feel like it. He just kept kind of looking for his own shot. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like his shot selections tonight. He felt like he was forcing it. He had some pretty good mid-range looks, but otherwise, I think he could have hit his teammates a little better and swung the ball around a little better, but yeah, so he had a pretty strong start to the preseason, but it kind of fizzled out here at the end.
His defense tonight, though, on Booker.
Yes, his defense was still very solid.
You got to talk about that tonight. Dude, tonight, I mean, that was, set aside from Klay and just Golden State period, definitely one of the bigger tests of the preseason. And Booker shot 5 for 17 tonight.
Right.
That was huge. He had 4 turnovers.
Yeah.
I thought Clarkson did a really great job on Booker, just not losing focus despite the offense not being there. And I think that's something you would have seen last year, where if things are working offensively, you start to gamble, get a little bit more desperate. in a bad way on the defensive end. And then tonight, you know, he stuck to his principles. Yeah, I just thought he did a great job going over picks, fighting over those screens, and just really contesting all of Booker's shots, not trying to go for any home run plays or anything like that. So that absolutely paid off.
You're right. That's a good point. Offensively, he fizzled out at the end here these last two games, but defensively, he was still very solid. And tonight, you could tell he had very active hands deflecting passes everywhere. His effort was still there, jumping and just, jumping into the lane and whatnot. So, yeah, solid defense by Jordan Clarkson for the entire preseason. I guess this is how we'll do it. We'll just go down the line with the players and just talk about their last two games. Obviously, sure. When we went with Brandon Ingram and Golden State, we thought maybe that aggression would carry over to tonight, especially since his last two games against Golden State have been his best two games, right? He had like 12 points the previous game before that. And you'd think that because he's playing against guys like Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green that he kind of got the monkey off his shoulder, and against lesser players like the Suns, maybe he just continued to go off. But unfortunately tonight, 0 for 2, only 2 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 turnovers, 1 steal. Wasn't very impressive. He did have some pretty good passes there in the second half that guys just couldn't convert, like Tarek and Nance and stuff like that. But outside of that, he really didn't try and find his own shot. I mean, he only took 2 shots. So did you see from Ingram?
Yeah, I thought he was a lot more passive on offense. He had some open shots he should have taken, then he passed it up. And at that point, our offense had already run its first action, right? And then something that we've been struggling with, and I think you and I both could agree that we've learned so much from Pete Zayas, we're not seeing counters. Once that first option is gone, it's like, oh, crap, what do we do now? And then it's Lou Williams or whoever just jacking up an ISO shot. And I thought Ingram was kind of the reason why we ended up in a lot of those positions tonight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just going to take some time because he's young. There was one moment where he attacked the basket in semi-transition and got fouled, which is good. But it'll come. For whatever reason tonight, I guess he just wasn't feeling the game. He wasn't running point as much, although he did a little bit. I didn't really see any. It paid dividends, though. He had a couple steals tonight. His defense was pretty good. It was in that like really ugly midpoint of the third quarter. It was kind of fun to watch, but also really stupid. So he had a nice steal at half court, which is great. But yeah, I think this is what we're going to have to live with over the course of the season. A couple nights he'll impress. Next night he'll kind of disappear. You don't necessarily see him do anything stupid or boneheaded that stands out to you. And that's natural. It'll be the ebbs and flows of the rookie year, and we'll see what happens.
I think this game in particular was just the ugliest I've seen our offense look. Like you said, like the ball was sticking, the guys weren't moving around as much, there was less off-ball action and off-ball screening. It was just like we were stuck, and it was stuck in one guy's hands, and then that was pretty much it. There was no counters to anything we were doing, and it was kind of sad and pathetic to watch, unfortunately. And the only times that we looked good was in transition, which was ignited by Julius Randle.
Oh, my goodness. He went nuts tonight, dude.
And then D'Angelo Russell in the fourth quarter was also leading the break and kind of finding guys, getting shots for himself, and also Marcelo Huerta. So what do you know? So let's quickly go through this. D'Angelo Russell, I think these last two games have been, I guess, a more even-keeled kind of, like, this is what D'Angelo looks when he is up and down, kind of, where it's not, like, totally off the rails where he only gets, like, 8 points, but it's also not amazing, you know? So he had 17 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 turnovers, 2 steals. So at best, it's like an uneven game, but he totally did disappear off the face of the planet, which is good to see. And actually, this game, he struggled really early on, but was able to find his footing in the fourth quarter, which is what you want to see.
I really like that he, as he was struggling, he was getting into the paint, you know, utilizing the floater more. He got to the line. He was 6 for 8, so it's good to see him try to affect the game in a wide variety of ways instead of just taking 19, 20-foot jumpers.
Yeah, and like I said, in the fourth quarter, 2 or 3 plays in a row in transition. One, he found Randle for the dunk. The next one, he found Nick Young for an open three. The next one, he took it himself. Like, that's the versatility you want to see from D'Angelo, like being a real conductor on the floor. Obviously, you want to see that more in the half court as well and not just in transition. But still, right now, to see him have that general floor leadership on the court, it was great to see tonight. Yeah, so D'Angelo Russell, pretty good. Even against the Golden State game, there were times where he was too caught up in the Steph Curry match of it all and trying to one up him every time. And like, he saw Curry take a three, so he's like, okay, I'm going to take a three off the dribble, you know? but, you know, he had a pretty good game in spite of that, outside of the turnovers in the Golden State game. 16 points, 9 assists, 7 turnovers, but he did hit 4 threes. Let's move on to Julius Randle. Like we mentioned, kind of up and down again. He started off pretty rocky. Once again, yeah. The spacing, the lack of ability to shoot did not help him. But obviously, once he got back into the game, point guard Julius came into play in transition, and he had literally two plays straight in a row where he ignited the offense. One, he dunked it himself or went in coast to coast, and then the other, he had found Lou Will for a wide open three. And then from there, he was able to run the break with D'Angelo as well in the second half. And that's the versatility that you see from Julius Randle when it's in transition. He also hit a jump shot tonight, which is good.
Yeah, and then he took that open three when there were like 30 seconds left on the clock to end the half, and it was really stupid.
Right. but we'd rather see him actually be intentional about it. So
I felt like if you know exactly which one I'm talking about.
Yes,
though,
I do. Yeah.
Oh, God, it was ugly because our guys weren't even back on the other end of the floor. And he just stood around. It's almost like he looked at Luke like, is it okay if I take it right now?
Right.
You know, it was not a good decision on his part.
Yeah.
That was like forcing the issue, I thought.
Yeah, I think people were saying it was a 2-for-1 scenario, but even then he was already out of position for himself, you know? He was stumbling on his own footing. So it's like, why would you, even if it's a 2-for-1, maybe get a better shot, or because it's already down to 28 seconds, maybe just do
concede
that.
It. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think his biggest thing is just the mental focus. You know, there was a point in the game where, as usual, he used his hands when he was in the post, and he was trying to steal the ball away from the passing lane instead of just standing his ground. And then right after that, there was illegal defense call on him. He was standing right in the middle of the paint, and he was directing someone else on our team defensively. Got called for 3 seconds. So he just gets caught up in his own head.
Yeah, for sure. But otherwise, he had a pretty good game. 15 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. He had that really good hustle motor bully ball play in the third or fourth quarter where he took it up, got the offensive rebound, like barreled some people, and then put it back up with the right hand for an and one. He was really pumped up after that, so that was really cool to see.
Yeah, I think the net for him tonight was a positive for sure. He's just got to learn from his mistakes.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about his power forward counterpart coming off the bench, who could arguably be in the starting lineup soon. I don't know. People think that's not a plausibility, but I don't know why not. Larry Nance Jr., man, in only 19 minutes, 10 points, 9 rebounds, this guy continues to hit his jump shots. He hit a three-pointer and then another jump shot. And then in the Golden State game, I think 3 of his shots were like jump shots as well. 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 steals in only 19 minutes once again. So this guy in less minutes and limited minutes is putting up numbers, not hurting your team, playing really solid defense. And this guy, he almost took sole claim and possession of Alex Len's unborn child tonight.
Oh my God.
By almost jamming down that crazy hammer poster dunk. He did it too hard, man, but
I think it's those Honda Center rims. They're like too soft or something. So
seriously, but that would have been incredible. But what did you think of Larry Nance? Cause I thought he's been amazing the last two games pretty much.
Oh yeah. Today he had a really good game. He was, he didn't fade into the background tonight. He had some really good rim runs where Huertas, of course, was just finding him all over the place. A lot of our bigs, and we'll get to it, had great rim runs tonight. He was taking the mid-range shots when they were given to him. Defensively against Len, who's got several inches on him, he showed really good discipline as far as going up vertically, realizing I'm not going to block this 7-foot-1 guy's shot. And it actually had an effect on him because I think Nance has a little bit more girth than Len, so that was really good recognition on his part. I thought he played great defense on Warren, and he made that one three-pointer, no hesitation whatsoever. Active hands in the passing lanes. More times than not, we're gonna have great things to say about Nance, and then the few times where we don't, they're not even gonna be that bad. It's just gonna be like, I don't really remember him impacting the game a whole lot. So hopefully he can consistently, for him it's almost like he wants to pick his spots, you know. He doesn't want to like push the envelope too much because he recognizes his role on the team, but no one's going to fault him for doing too much.
Right. And, you know, like Larry Nance, tonight he was almost too aggressive. Like, he was almost hurting himself on some plays because he was playing so hard on the defensive end. But that was still good to see, you know. And Nance, in such limited minutes, is such a spark. And I don't know if that makes it better that he comes off the bench and does that, but there is something wrong with that starting unit. Obviously, Dang's not there. Mozgov wasn't there, but...
Well, I mean, I think at this point, our second unit is our comfort zone.
Yeah.
I feel a lot more at ease when I'm watching them. I can rely on them for their energy. And as far as how they're executing the offense, it looks a lot more organized. And you can point toward, you know, Huertas or Calderon or whoever's in there in the moment for those things. And that's not to take away from D'Angelo. But I think the way that Nance and Tarik know how to fill space on the weak side, that's a huge difference in comparison to Randall. That was something I was paying a really close attention to tonight. Whenever Randall was in, I feel like he was just standing in the lanes where the point guard should be able to get. Mm-hmm. And obviously that makes the offense stall. Whereas when it was the second unit, floor spacing was pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. To close it out on Nance, I'll give Tommy's thoughts. He's messaging us on Twitter. His opinion on the starting lineup, he said it should be D'Angelo, Clarkson, Dang, Nance, and Mozgov. He said Huertas/Calderon, Lou, Young, Randall, and Tarik Black / E in certain scenarios off the bench. He said Randall makes too much sense as a bench energy guy until he starts hitting his shot. Otherwise, it just muddles up the spacing. Right now, Nance shoots way better and plays better D, and obviously Ingram as well. He said, we saw how Robinson ignited the second unit, and Randall can do that off the bench. Plus, he's going to be so anxious coming off the bench, he will push every rebound, which is true. Yeah. You know, so we'll see what happens. I think Tommy failed to mention where Ingram is playing in this lineup, but I'm guessing. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, maybe it's going to be Lou Will, Nick Young, Ingram, Randall, Ian Black, if that's what he's looking for. And then you'll have Huertas and Calderon in for spot minutes some here and there if Randall indeed comes off the bench. But either way, we won't know. Right now, it's looking like Randall is going to start because he has been starting every single game. But I wouldn't be surprised if down the line, Luke tries to switch things up if things continue to go the way they have been with the starting lineup getting off to very bad starts. And I think I get the logic here too, because I think Randall would actually benefit from having a guy like Huertas to actually pass him the ball in the proper positions, and he'll know where to be. Whereas D'Angelo still will look for his shot sometimes, and it's harder for Randall in that sense. I think that'll do it for us. The last thing I want to talk about is E.G. Anlian. people are continuing to talk about this guy, but guys, he's going to make the team. It's like that simple. He is a bargain trade ship, and at the end of the day, no matter how bad he's playing out there, what did the guy do? He hit a three this game, and he hit a three the last game. And in the last game, he hit a three in epic fashion, right? After D'Angelo drop-stepped Steph Curry on that behind-the-back crossover, passing it to Yee for the open three. And really, at the end of the day, no matter how bad he plays, the last I checked, we have two big guys who can hit threes consistently, Larry Nance and E.G. Anlian. And Larry Nance is just figuring out how to do that for the first time. I don't see any other big guy who can do that. So for that reason alone, just for break in case of emergency, I think that's why E.G. Anlian will make the team. And if he doesn't play, that's actually better, because you keep his salary low and he doesn't meet his minimum games played. And you can trade him at the deadline and he'll only be like 300K. So I think that's where we'll leave it with regards to E. Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I mean, it all makes sense. I feel bad for Thomas Robinson. He played a hell of a game tonight. Such an energy guy, but it is a bit redundant with him, Tarik, Randall, Nance. You know what I mean? So it is what it is.
Yep, for sure. With that said, that'll wrap up the preseason.
Oh, can I add one thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're 2-6 now.
I was exactly going to say. I said I missed.
So we know somebody's out there being like, they're 2-5. You idiots don't even know their record. What's wrong with you?
Well, we caught ourselves. It was, I think they started out 2-1, right? And then we lost the last five. So, 2-6. Either way, like I said, Lakers, I hope you guys are ready. I feel kind of nervous and anxious for the start of the season, but at least I know, regardless of whether or not we lose games, that we're going to be able to hold on to a few plays here and there within the game.
Oh, that, yeah, absolutely.
That'll make us happy and proud, and we'll actually be able to see progress, and I think that's the biggest thing. So
you know what I'm going to do before next Wednesday? I have a few Laker games saved on my DVR from last year because they were quote-unquote good games. I'm just going to watch one of them so I can be really pissed at how terrible we were. Yeah. And then no matter what happens Wednesday night, I'm going to feel good.
Yeah, sounds good, man. All right, so hope you guys are on board. With that said, we'll turn it over now to our talk with Almighty Ballers Podcast Network, Chris Axman, and another podcast on his network called The Flagrant Take with their resident Lakers fan, Fred Johnson. So hope you guys enjoy. That'll be me, Alan, Tommy, talking all things Lakers from this offseason. Surprisingly, a lot of Timofey Mozgov talk, which we didn't expect. But outside of that...
why would you not expect I'm number one free agent?
Get out of here, Mozzie. But I will say, Mozgov was epic in the Golden State game. We'll leave with that, and then we'll also enter with that on the Chris Axman podcast, because Mozgov had that crazy poster, right? Off the D'Angelo pick and roll bounce sneak pass, and then he also had that crazy Kevin Durant block of a lifetime off the alley-oop. That was amazing. Mozgod, as we like to call him. So with that said, we'll turn it over to Chris Axman and our talk with Almighty Ballers Podcast Network.
And I try to go hard at every basket and dunk all the balls.
It's the preseason. We've watched some Lakers games. The Lakers games have been pretty good. There have been some ups. There's been some downs. If you're D'Angelo Russell, you've missed all of your shots in one game and then made all of them in another game. But if there's one thing we've learned, it's that Nick Young is undisputedly the best player on the Lakers. Can everyone agree to that right now?
Yeah, that's
all. Those in favor say aye.
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 I cautiously agree.
I will actually say all those in favor say P. So ready? 1, 2, 3. P.
P.
There you go.
So this is everyone from the Lakers Legacy podcast, and then it's me and Fred Johnson from The Flagrant Take. I'm Chris Axman, host of Almighty Ballin' and the producer of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And then on the other line, there are all the guys from the Lakers Legacy podcast. So just one of you guys pick that up, run with it, you know, just...
Sure, cool. This is Jonathan Hernandez. You can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. I'm here with Alan Riley and Tommy Alexander. Guys, if you want to share your Twitter handles, go ahead. But for the most part, we're at Lakers Legacy Pod, so...
That's a great Twitter handle to follow. It's good enough for me.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Tommy?
Sweet. Yeah, same.
Yep, there's Tommy.
Whoa, Tommy. Are you there?
Sorry, am I cutting out? What's going on?
Yeah, you were cutting out a little bit.
Okay, sorry. No. Yeah, Lakers Legacy Podcast.
Are you talking to us from on the back of a dragon? Anyways, and then Fred. Fred's the host of The Flagrant Take, which is without a doubt the second best podcast on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Fred.
Debatable, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, it's debatable. you could be like third or fourth. But yeah, Fred, shout out to Twitter. Talk a little bit about Flagrant Take, you know, and we can get the show on the freaking road.
Absolutely. Flagrant Take Podcast. I'm actually co-host, one of two, with my buddy Jim Matthews. And we basically cover the current events and hot topics that are going on in the NBA. We usually drop around Fridays. We also have the fan page on Facebook, the Flagrant Take Podcast. But feel free to hit us up on Twitter, NYJones7 for Jim and Flagrant Take for myself.
Cool.
Sweet. So beyond lit, if you guys are Lakers fan, is that true? You guys aren't just covering the Lakers. You are all Lakers fans, right?
Yeah, we're all Lakers fans.
All
yeah, I mean,
yes.
Okay, cool. So what is your sentiment right now? You know, and that's a little bit different from how are all the fans feeling? Like, what is, you know, the tenor of the Lakers fandom? You specifically, how are you feeling? And, you know, I guess, like, we'll start with Tommy, I guess. Is that good? That seems good.
Sure, Tommy, go ahead. Why don't you tell him our favorite word that we like to use on the show?
Well, we're feeling pretty lit right now, to be honest with you. I mean,
I said beyond lit.
Yeah, beyond lit. No, pretty much what you expect, right? We're in a rebuilding situation, and we're just trying to enjoy it. I I think there's rebuilding and like, oh, this team is just going to be bad for 10 years and collect draft picks. And there's rebuilding with a purpose. And I think we're all pretty excited that it seems like this isn't like a quote unquote rebuild that the Clippers did from 1985 to 2005 or whatever. It seems like there's a direction now. So I think we're pretty excited about that.
All right. Yeah, and I think on my end, if I could jump in, you know, it's funny that on our podcast, we've kind of, you know, the Sixers have hashtag trust the process. And for some reason, at least on our podcast, it became hashtag lit. That's our biggest contribution. That's our phrase, which is sad. But that's really how we feel right now. And like Tommy said, I think there's some intentionality and purpose to this. Obviously, the last few years have been hard to fully go full bore into this because Kobe's been here. We've had to see him on his way out, really. And I think once Kobe left and Kobe retired, you know, God bless his soul, we haven't been able to really go full steam ahead. But I think now we're in that moment, especially with Byron being gone and Luke joining the fold. So there you go.
I would say wouldn't our hashtag have been trust the salary cap? Because I think that's what was being preached every year as far as salary cap room. We're going to definitely get a star this year. And then every offseason would come and go, and there was no star.
And you got, I mean, that makes sense.
Want to count Wesley Johnson.
You got your max contract man, Timofey Mozgov, so...
We did, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, so I've been defending the Mozgov contract because, like, to me it makes a ton of sense. I think that, you know, there's a ton of hate for the Evan Turner signing, and there was a ton of hate for the Timofey Mozgov signing. I think that those have been the two most contested contracts. But I think both teams were in a situation where, specifically the Lakers, they absolutely needed. I mean, we've seen how bad this Lakers defense is in the preseason, and mm-hmm. I don't think it gets better from here. So they absolutely needed a center who could protect the rim by getting vertical, right? Because that's specifically mm-hmm. what they needed. And they needed a guy who could be an Andrew Bogut in the Luke Walton Warrior system and set big-ass picks, right? And they needed a veteran who is ultimately replaceable in the end when they do find their center of the future, because that's the big missing piece, right? Mm-hmm. And they need a guy who's high character, and specifically a high character guy who can remain high character when he's on a losing team. Because there's this catch-22 where if you're high character, you probably don't want to sign on a really crappy team for a ton of money. But I think Mozgov is that super rare guy who will actually put in effort, who will actually put in work, and do his role. So Mozgov, to me, literally was the only guy on the market who fit all these criteria. And I think that if there was a possibility of him going somewhere else, you needed to pretty much pay him what you ended up paying him.
I think at the end of the day, the optics of it all looked pretty bad in the order that they did it in, because he was 12:01 a.m. call, you know, and I think that's what most of us had a concern over. And then outside of that, it was just more the years. You know, the money wouldn't have made a difference. In my opinion, I would have just signed him to like 2 years, $40 million, and then have been done with it. Because again, you're signing a guy who, like, in a vacuum, Timofey Mozgov is everything you described him to be, like a really good defender, really great pick and roll player, actually super athletic, can catch the ball really really well. And D'Angelo Russell now has a pick and roll partner, as opposed to last year when he just had Roy Hibbert, who couldn't even catch the ball or even finish. So all those things in a vacuum are great. I think it was more the long term, at least in my opinion, that had me concerned. One, you're like picking up a guy who just had a botched knee surgery and couldn't even play 20 minutes last year, and then you're giving him 4 years. You know, the money doesn't matter, but it's 4 years fully guaranteed. And seeing how well Zubats has come on, you know, it's early, but he might not come on until maybe year three, year four. But by that time, you'll still have Timofey Mozgov making $17 million, and presumably he'd be doing that from the bench, you know. So, I mean, that's where my concerns lie. We've actually got Timofey Mozgov on the line, so we can actually ask him, isn't that right, Timofey?
Hello, guys. I am very happy to be here, and I appreciate your kind words. I work hard. I do my best.
There you go. Thank you, Timofey.
You are welcome.
Who was it? Was it Timofey or was it Zubac? Was like, I put the ball in the basket.
that was Zubac, right? Zubac.
I like Zubac.
Yes, I put the ball in the basket and. I block all of the shots.
There you go.
That's all I need to hear.
Well, no, my question for you guys, in reference to big men who were on the market, I mean, I remember there was Hassan Whiteside, there was Festus Ezeli, who came off of a bad NBA Finals, but he had the familiarity with Luke Walton in his system. I won't even bring up Bismack Biyombo, because I think when you were looking for a starter, it was pretty evident that, you know, he can't necessarily handle that load.
Obviously, dude, Bismack's great. You don't even know.
Yeah, Hassan Whiteside obviously had no intentions of leaving Miami. And sure. I know that there were injury concerns for Festus Ezeli and being able to stay healthy, but I would say those same concerns still exist with Timofey, no?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I said. You know, he had that botched knee surgery and he wasn't even able to play in the playoffs last year. So, I mean, that was my biggest concern. And the reason why I like Bismack Biyombo was, one, he can also defend pick and roll. He's a great pick and roll defender. You know, Timofey Mozgov, when he reaches that past 10 feet, he's like stuck on an island because he's kind of lead footed. And, you know, guys like Damian Lillard can easily like pass him. At least Bismack Biyombo provides us with some extra perimeter defense outside of just the rim protection. So that's why I was wondering, well, how come we're not getting Bismack? But at the end of the day, I'm actually okay with it. It's just the years was the biggest issue for me. I don't know if Tommy wants to chime in on what his thoughts of Mozgov are.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree with everything that's been said so far. The big thing is we needed a veteran, we needed size, we needed rim protection. As much as I liked Bismack and what he did in the postseason last year, I like the way that he moves laterally on the perimeter, which like kind of fits in with what we're trying to do now, or I guess what every team in the NBA is trying to do now. But we needed a big body down there, and Timofey was the guy. Hassan Whiteside was not going to sign with the team that won 17 games. Apparently Azili's injury was so scary, whatever it was, that nobody wanted to sign him, which is why he ended up taking way below what everybody projected for him to go to Portland, you know. And I think he signed a 2-year deal and the second year isn't even guaranteed. So, or it's like a team option. So it's one of those things where when it happened, I was as shocked as anyone else. Again, the years, like, could it have been 3 years? I don't know. Would he have accepted 3 years right at the deadline, or like right when the clock started? When you're in a situation where you've struck out in free agency as many years in a row as we have, you sort of just have to make your move and live with the consequences. Apparently, you know, after we signed Mozgov, there were reports, and of course we'll never know if this was true, but several other teams were thinking about contacting him. Maybe they wouldn't have paid him as much as we did, or maybe they wouldn't have paid him as many years as we did. But when you're a team that wins 17 games, it doesn't really matter if you're the Lakers. You sort of have to overpay to get those types of guys.
Right.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you talk about a guy like Bismack Biyombo and even Festus Ezeli. I think it would have been a bad sign if either of those guys had taken tons of money and a long contract from the Lakers, because like I said, I think that there's this catch-22 that people don't realize. If you're choosing willingly to go to a team that is in full rebuild and you're a veteran, that's a bad sign, because it means you don't really want to compete, right? So it's a bad sign. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're, you know, gonna just eat hamburgers and like Raymond Felton all day necessarily, but I just don't think that – I mean, Bismack Biyombo in particular, right? I mean, he's had weight problems in his career. Now, he looks like chiseled marble in the playoffs this year, but he also just got a huge contract from the Magic. I mean, we'll see. I really like Bismack. I like his upside, and I think I'm really going to like him next time his contract is up, because he strikes me as the type of guy who's going to be a contract player, right? So That's my concern. I don't think that there was a guy who you could sign who would still, you know, try. Like Mozgov, there was that transition defensive block he had really recently where he ran down the court and came from behind and swatted. I'm not sure what team it was against, but he was hustling his ass off in the preseason. How many 30-year-old, 400-pound Russians can you think of that would do that? Because Nikola Pekovic wouldn't do that.
Right. No,
I mean, to say myself until you said Russian, and then I was like, oh, well, I guess not me.
No, I mean, everything you're saying is correct, and I agree with you. I think at the end of the day, if the Timofey Mozgov signing had happened last, this would have made I mean, nobody would have had an uproar, really. But, you know, it's, I think it's just the optics, like him being signed first. And then we found out, oh, Jordan Clarkson got a steal of a deal. And then Luau Deng signed. And they pretty much lined up Luau Deng's contract with Timofey Mozgov's contract. And I think, for me, I was totally fine with that strategy where it's like, okay, for 3 or 4 years, the Lakers have pretty much said, we're just going to rebuild with the young guys and continue to develop them. And maybe in year 3 or 4, when Timofey Mozgov's contract and Luau Deng's contract expires, that's when we go out into real free agency once again. And they're kind of saying it's going to be a 3 or 4 year process here. And I was totally fine with that once I realized that was the strategy. Or initially I was just like, Mozgov, what the heck are we just going to do with Mozgov? He's not going to move the dial. But yeah, like you said, he is a really solid player if he's healthy. And I think for me, I just don't think there's a reality in year 4 where I'm like, Timofey Mozgov super effective. I just see him coming off the bench by that time. But I think also at that time, it really won't matter. So,
yeah, and let's move on to a more lit topic. I think, you know, probably it would have been, this podcast would have been, you know, exponentially more lit if we had just opened with the idea, okay, D'Angelo Russell.
Yes.
Go. Run with it. Okay. So I want from you guys, D'Angelo Russell player comparisons, because I've heard some interesting ones and I'm looking to add to my portfolio of D'Angelo Russell player comparisons.
Sure. Alan, do you want to go?
Yeah, he's such a unique player. It's hard to pinpoint one other guy, but I would say I see some James Harden in him, and it isn't simply because he's a lefty, but they both have kind of an old man game to them. They're great in the post. D'Angelo surprisingly has some advanced footwork while he works in the post, and you would think he would just want to stay on the perimeter and come off screens all day and shoot jumpers, but he has the height advantage as a 6'5" point guard. At the same time, the Mike Conley comparison comes out pretty frequently due to his length. I could see that in some ways as far as defensive potential. Conley's a great defender, and D'Angelo has shown some flashes of that, so we'll have to see if that can pan out in the next couple years. As far as other players, again, it's pretty tough to compare him to some others. As far as his passing skills, I really can't think of another guy that to compare him to at this point, just because our offense last year was so stagnant, we couldn't really see him do anything. Now this year, it's a very small sample size. He has shown some great vision, but I still think he has so much room to grow. It might be a little bit premature to pinpoint a particular player with elite passing skills. So yeah, for now, I'm going to go with Harden because he does look to score the ball first and foremost. And then Conley, I could see a little bit as far as some of his measurables on the defensive end.
Cool. I guess for me, you know, I think Harden is going to be a popular answer, and I agree with Harden. I also like a little bit of Manu Ginobili in his game because he's very crafty and not super athletic. I know Manu Ginobili has had some athletic plays, sneaky athletic plays in his history, and I think D'Angelo will show that here and there with like a random poster or two. But for the most part, he uses his skill and craftiness to get buckets. And I think Harden and Manu Ginobili are pretty good post-up players because of their size at the two as well. So I like those comps for him. And obviously, I think we're seeing more and more with his quick release and how hot he gets from three-point land. I think the Curry comparison is pretty apt, or if you want to go Damian Lillard, when he gets it going and he gets it hot, like it really comes off his fingertips and wrists like on fire. So that's why I think those comparisons come into play. You know, initially when he first came into the league, people were saying like, oh, if nothing shakes right and this guy sucks, maybe his worst case scenario is Brandon Jennings. But I can't even see that at this point because, one, Brandon Jennings is barely 6 feet, and D'Angelo Russell is, what, 6'4", and he's been able to really post people up and kill people in the mid-range and pick and roll, putting them in jail and just hitting these mid-range jump shots and also getting on fire from three. So, yeah, that's who I would compare him to. Harden, Manu Ginobili, and then from three, a little bit of Curry. With regards to his passing, you know, he's a wild card right now. He likes to take very risky passes and very flashy-looking passes. The next evolution of D'Angelo's game will be, you know, can he be a good floor general for 48 minutes the entire game and not always go for the home run pass? And can he make better decisions, you know? And so, yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Tommy?
Yeah, I think Harden is the obvious one just because similar body types. And I mean, you could argue similar position because although D'Angelo is a point guard, and I think he's more of a natural point guard than Harden, they are both scoring guards. The thing I heard recently, I can't remember who said this, but I kind of liked it. It's like not obvious, and there are more ways they're dissimilar than they're similar. But I think Chris Paul is kind of an interesting one.
I like Chris Paul,
in the sense that like there aren't really that many guys who are deadly from the mid range anymore, and Chris Paul is one of those guys left. Chris Paul's really good at utilizing screens, getting into space in the mid range. In the mid-range area of the court and converting. And I think D'Angelo is, I mean, he's already shown signs that he could potentially be in the next few years, like one of the, especially as Chris Paul starts to age out, like one of the best, if not the best mid-range scorer in the entire league. So I like that. But his skill set, yeah, it's so unique. Like this guy is 6'5". He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He's got a lightning quick release. He puts up threes like with an effortless stroke, you know what I mean? And it's James Harden, you know, they look the same. They're both lefties, but D'Angelo, I think is even a better shooter than Harden. So it's going to be really crazy to see how his career progresses, in my opinion.
Well, I hear a rebuttal here. I'll go real quick and then we'll definitely get this rebuttal in here, but you know, not only am I a Laker fanatic, but I'm also a Cincy native, so I'm absolutely going to dig back in the crates as everybody's doing their modern comparisons. So for all the millennials, I'm going to say he's a taller version of Nick Van Axel in regards to his dramatics. The ice water in my veins, the flair for the dramatics, the at times showmanship that he puts on the court, and the fact that he was also once a Laker point guard and a former All-Star as a Laker as well back in the mid-90s. I'm going to go with the Nick Van Axel comparison. I mean, a lot of people have pretty much forgotten him in history, but he was also a guy that, you know, had quite the impressive college resume leading his team to a championship. So I'm going to go with Nick Van Axel until I see more and see it also on the postseason stage before I start giving him the same acclaim as other perennial All-Pros in the league.
Does he shoot his free throws from the three-point line like Nick Van Exel?
Not yet, but just give it time.
Not yet. Okay, so how about this, guys? And this fits into a larger concept, which I was trying to sell to the Locked On Lakers guys. My comparison, okay, what I would like to see from him, and this is, you know, an end result rather than – it's a work in progress, right? I would like him to be Utah Jazz-era Deron Williams. Because I think that that's how they're going to run their half-court offense, is like the Jazz in 2006 or so.
I would be down with that, to be honest with you. I think his playmaking and floor general ship, or that's not a word, but his floor general, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not to Deron Williams level, because Deron Williams came in and like averaging 8 assists and like really being able to run the show really well. But if he could get to that level...
He wasn't in Byron Scott's offense, though.
I mean, that's true. But, I mean, even in Ohio State, Russell had that problem of, you know, taking too many risky passes. He is a great passer. He has great vision, but it sometimes comes in spurts. Whereas Deron Williams, to me, is more of a complete playmaker. But if he can get to that level, yes, I would love that. And I think with Luke Walton, he can. So just don't get injured, you know?
I'm just going to go straight to the reason why the, you know, Sloan-era Utah Jazz is how I see them operating in half court. And this is specifically in half court because they were a slow-paced team and they didn't get out on the break, which is, I think, what Luke Walton wants to do. The thing is, I think that the full-court offense is going to answer itself. And it's not going to be something that Lakers fans are going to have to worry about, because I think that, you know, I mean, for all the concerns I have about Julius Randle, his full-court offense looks pretty dope a lot of the times. I think that Brandon Ingram is going to like suit well to that. So all of my questions are, if the defense gets back, can you create in the half court? And that's where I see things coming to fruition. And that brings me to Brandon Ingram as Andre Kirilenko. Guys, I think he's a part of their core, and I think he's going to be a star, but not like a scoring star. I think he'll be like Andre Kirilenko. You know, I want him to average 2 blocks, you know, 2 steals, you know, like 4 assists, 10 rebounds, and like 15 points. And I think that would be amazing for the Lakers. So, yeah, I mean, are you guys on the Kevin Durant train, or would you be okay with seeing him end up being, you know, a star as a role player, sort of?
Yeah, I think he I never really bought the Kevin Durant thing. That's like sort of a lazy comparison to me because I have similar body types. But I think right now it's hard to see because he's so weak. He gets knocked around the paint. Like, you know, you touch that guy and he bounces like 20 feet off of you. But one player that I always liked as a comparison for him was Kawhi Leonard, in that I think that everything he does offensively is very methodical. He doesn't really take many risks, or he doesn't have a whole lot of flash to his game. He's shown like potential to be able to operate out of the mid post. He's got a decent shot, which, I mean, Kawhi didn't develop until he got into the NBA. But I think that, you know, he makes the simple play. I think he's going to be a guy who takes high percentage shots. I don't think he's going to be Kevin Durant, who's going to go out and score 30 a game for you and completely every single night in and night out, completely dominate his matchup. But I think he's going to also, I think he's going to be more than just a really, really good role player. I think he's going to be a star, you know, all-star type player. I just don't think it's going to be quite Kevin Durant.
Alan, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think on the defensive end, if he were to be similar to Andre Kirilenko, any of us would take that. We've already seen in the preseason his ability to block shots in a like a Kawhi Leonard type fashion, where he's not swatting at the ball, he isn't closing out on guys by jumping as high as he possibly can. He has great fundamentals. So in terms of being a shot blocker and his man defense, if he were to resemble Kirilenko, I would be happy with that. Where my opinion would differ is offensively, I do think he will make more of an impact than Kirilenko did back in those days. And, you know, Kirilenko was in a system where Boozer and Deron Williams were the go-to guys. Maybe on a different team, he would have had a more significant offensive impact. On the Lakers, I definitely foresee Ingram being the first or second option, depending on who's feeling it between him and D'Angelo. So I think he'll be a perennial all-star at some point. So yeah, that's kind of where I stand with that.
I think for me, I think even as it is right now, I think by year two, Brandon Ingram will kind of look like, and Luke Walton's made this comparison, he'll probably already look like what Trevor Ariza took 3 or 4 years to look like, you know what I mean? Because Trevor Ariza had to develop his three-point shot. His defense was always pretty solid. He became an adequate defender. Right now, Brandon Ingram's still trying to feel out what he can do. But if you remember in Duke, it took him half the season to eventually get going as well, but he still averaged 17 points. And so at the very, very worst, I think he's going to be a better Trevor Ariza who can actually playmake for other people and also get his own shot, which I guess isn't Trevor Ariza. But you know, not to say he's going to be this guy, but the same concerns were made for Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, I don't know what Brandon Ingram is going to develop into. I just know he already has the jump shot. He already has a 3-point shot, and he's got fundamentals down that guys his age don't already have. It's up to him really to round out the rest of his game and gain that confidence and kind of readjust to the speed of the NBA and the bodies, the strength and whatnot. But we've seen Giannis Antetokounmpo in 1.5-2 years gain the muscle, gain the confidence, gain the keys to be able to play make, and who knows what'll happen if those same things shake out for Brandon Ingram. But I think his worst case scenario is, you know, if it's Andre Kirilenko, you know, that's fine. I just think he has so much more offensive polish than a guy like that, or even a guy like Trevor Ariza. So that's kind of where I stand.
Well, I'd love to see the second half of the season. I mean, we saw last year D'Angelo's numbers in the second half of the season were, you know, phenomenal, and they absolutely skyrocketed from the first half. And a lot of that was just finally Byron Scott throwing his hands up saying, okay, you just do what you need to do. But in regards to him, you know, building off of the conversation of his fundamentals, I think defensively in the second half, once he can start to actually just play the game and not think every step while he's out there on the court, I think you're going to see him being able to jump into passing lanes and, you know, change shots as people may try to drive or in the fast break when he can chase people down. But I would love to see after a full offseason, another offseason, if he can develop some muscle and see if he and D'Angelo can kind of get a pick and pop game going as they could. You know, like a 1-3 type screen and roll here, here or there, and I would love to see how they can develop that chemistry, because what I don't want to see is D'Angelo over dribbling and then Brandon Ingram gets relegated to the corner, and now you're just trying to say, all right, will you be this catch and shoot player, kind of like AK-47 was on those Jazz teams. While he doesn't need to be Durant and go for 30 every game, he absolutely could be a guy that if you stagger his minutes with D'Angelo Russell, he can eventually give you 22 to 25 a game, probably starting in year two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I mean, the problem inherent there, right, is that, and you were sort of on to what I was talking about when you were talking about him interrupting passing lanes and just sort of playing free safety on defense and, you know, making hay from those turnovers that he creates and, you know, getting to the other end and finishing like Andre Kirilenko did. I mean, my problem is, if you're saying his offensive game is like Kawhi Leonard's, right? That's not, I mean, the Spurs offense was really like methodical, and I don't see how the Lakers with their players and the players that, you know, once they develop, they project to be, could play like that, honestly. I think, right, if you have a player whose number one comparison, it sounds like it's probably James Harden, I think the ball should almost always be in D'Angelo's hands. I think that he's going to be the most effective at pretty much initiating anything, and that Brandon Ingram is, honestly, if Kawhi Leonard wasn't such a freak of nature as far as, you know, some of the shots he hits and all that, those would be low efficiency shots for the vast majority of players in the league. And expecting that out of Ingram is, you know, I want to be realistic about what these players can ultimately be. And I just don't see the offensive fluidity from Brandon Ingram for him to be able to truly create offense. That's my concern.
Well, I think what you'll see a lot of is, you know, like I said, that's why I made it a point to say staggering the minutes between he and D'Angelo and making sure he gets that opportunity when he's running with that second unit, which obviously he'll do a lot of this year with him not being a starter. But ultimately, if he can be that guy that ends the first quarter or starts the second quarter and D'Angelo's probably on the bench, that'll allow him to kind of get into his flow of the game. And then obviously, you know, when we're talking fourth quarter, when both of those guys are on the court, you would like to think that they would develop that chemistry years two, three, and four once this team actually is trying to make moves into the postseason where they can actually play off of each other and, you know, nobody feels like they're being locked out of the offense.
Yeah, and I think another underrated part of Brandon Ingram's game that we're not giving him credit for, and we're not going to see for a while because he's still feeling himself out and what to do, is he was a really good playmaker. He's really smart. And in this system, he's always going to do the right thing. He's never going to be a negative on the court out there, whether it's offensive or defensively. So I think as he goes along, you'll be able to see him really be able to playmake for other people and at the very least help the system flow and hum along. So
it sounds like what you guys envision potentially for him on offense, I have Randall penciled in to play, honestly, most of those roles, because I think Randall's, you know, probably going to end up maximizing his offensive potential beyond his jump shot. But I can think of another guy who's like 6'8" and never really developed a super consistent jump shot who just won a championship by himself and has a similar athletic build. I mean, really, you know, there's recent comments with Draymond Green saying, this kid could be better than I am. Julius Randle has the physical profile of someone who could just be a wrecking ball on offense. And to me, ultimately, if this Lakers team works out, in large part, it'll be because Julius Randle just finishes at the basket like, you know, like a wrecking ball, right? And I can't see, it would be, it's really hard for me to believe that a guy with Brandon Ingram's game as anything more than a spot-up shooter could be able to create offense as efficient as Julius Randle, you know, catching and driving to the basket and just obliterating whoever happens to be there.
Oh, I've rarely heard efficient and Julius Randle used in the same sentence.
Okay,
or finishing in the paint.
Yes. And I'll tell you right now how Brandon Ingram efficiently will be more efficient than Julius Randle. He has a very polished post game right now, with the fact that he can't actually back people down, because he can just turn around and shoot that jump shot. And once he gets strength and girth down there and he's able to back people down, it's over. So that's one way. Julius Randle doesn't have a post game right now. Brandon Ingram already does. And he can shoot threes, so.
Well, I'm not talking about a post game. So what do you guys think about Julius Randle then? Long-term starter.
I think Jonathan has very particular opinions about Julius Randle. I think I'm much more optimistic about Randle than I think a lot of people are. And that might be surprising because apparently you think Randall's going to be really great. And I tend to believe
I think that he has the highest upside on the team, but I think he's also the most likely to be out of the league in 5 years.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be out of the league in 5 years. I tend to agree that he has very high upside. I think he was put in an unfortunate situation, in my opinion, because when he was drafted, he was pretty widely regarded as the quote unquote safe pick, or like, you know, the sort of like the Jabari Parker type of like, oh, this guy's developed. Oh, he's like an immediate impact, like immediate contributor. Like when the Lakers picked him, all I heard about was, oh, Lakers picked this guy because, you know, they need somebody who is going to compete right away because they have Kobe Bryant still. And I think he was way, way, way more raw than people expected. And so last year we saw that, obviously. You have a 6'8". Yeah, he's extremely athletic, extremely strong, but he shot 42% from the field as a power forward, which is like not going to cut it. And although his jump shot looks a little bit better this year, it's, you know, there's a lot to be desired. Okay, you can make the argument he doesn't necessarily need that, but then he's going to have to shore up a lot of other facets of his game. There's a guy who never developed a consistent jump shot. He's 6'8", very strong, won the championship, but that guy does everything else. And Randall, so far, his bread and butter is his offense, and it's not all there. LeBron is one of the best defenders in the NBA, in my opinion. He's one of the best playmakers in the NBA. And I think Randall has potential to be a really, really good playmaker and possibly an elite playmaker for his position. But it's so far away from what we've seen right now that it's, I don't know, it's hard to speculate. And then you have this guy behind him, Larry Nance Jr., who's just so solid. And yeah, he's never going to be a superstar, but it just makes Randall look so bad when you have this guy who comes in and plays defense and can space the floor and can make passes in the paint. And then you have Randall, who's like a chicken with his head cut off a lot of the time.
Chris, to be clear, were you talking about LeBron James or Draymond Green?
I was talking about LeBron.
Okay, gotcha.
I was talking about physical profiles too, by the way, because to me, that's not that far off of a comparison. I think part of the reason he gets that Draymond Green comparison, and LeBron pretty much did this before Draymond Green, is because of that rebound and then push the break. I mean, I think Charles Barkley is probably the most famous for being able to do that, but Julius Randle is probably best on offense off of, you know, getting a rebound and running the break. Look, I mean, I think that it may very well be the case that the Lakers' championship aspirations are sort of, you know, made or broken on Julius Randle being really good or them stumbling into a really good replacement for him. Because I think that Julius Randle in his ultimate form, right, is pretty much exactly what you want as a wingman in this type of offense with D'Angelo Russell, right?
I say we still need that interior toughness. I mean, I recently heard John Ireland on the Locked On podcast, and he said that his ceiling was Charles Barkley, referencing Julius Randle, but his floor was Anthony Mason. And honestly, I was fine with Anthony Mason, you know, with him being a guy who came off the bench and was that interior toughness and was a guy in that rotation that you could use. And, you know, I think Julius Randle will eventually have a more, you know, refined offensive game than Mace. But in regards to being a guy that could give you, you know, anywhere from 12-8 off the bench or as a starter could be a constant threat to be a double-double person for you, I don't see an issue with that. I think you're going to need that interior toughness. And also, I need to see that Larry Nance Jr. can survive an 82-game season playing big minutes. And I saw the wrist injury that he had, and I still have some, you know, some doubts in regards to his ability to take the pounding in the game.
Yeah.
I think the concern with Randall, and Tommy pointed to it, is the jump shot and inability to space the floor right now. That's not to say he won't eventually be able to just hit an open jump shot, but right now it's causing. We had at Laker Film Room Pete Zayas on yesterday, and he was just pretty much saying that having Julius and Timofey Mozgov on the floor right now is causing a lot of problems because neither of those guys can really space the floor, and defenses know that. And for Julius Randle, I think the problem that he's facing is he's at a position that's rapidly changing in the NBA, where now it's all about stretch fours and guys who can hit threes and do all of that stuff and also play defense. And can Julius Randle eventually round out his jump shot, you know, because you're right. Transition, he's amazing. He looks like LeBron James. He looks like Lamar Odom. That's his best asset. The problem is more than half the game is not going to be played in transition, you know? Absolutely. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, Julius Randle, when he was in high school, definitely had a above average outside jump shot. He had, I mean, he was also an off the dribble player. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in college, he was ultimately misutilized, which that happens a lot from Kentucky, big man being really misutilized. So, sure. I mean, he went into Kentucky with a different play style and skill set than he came out of it with, a lot like Scalabissier, I think, honestly. I think he was a, you know, round peg forced into a square hole. And, I mean, man, guys, I am high on his upside, but I am increasingly probably, I have tipped over towards the, I'm mostly unlikely about him ultimately getting it together, because I haven't ever seen him have a good defensive possession, honestly. Not a single time. I've never said, like, wow, that was a really well-played defensive possession, and I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't know why he can't get that together, and I think his floor is David Lee right now. 33-year-old David Lee.
He's also getting ready to embark upon his second year of actual gameplay. I know this will be his third season with the organization, but I think there still has to be an element of development for him as well, being in a new system and also understanding that, you know, what was it, 4 years ago he was still in high school, or 5 years ago he was still in high school. So, you know, I think there's still an element there where he has to figure out just who he is as a basketball player and how it's going to fit with the rest of the guys on the court. Make no mistake, I think he is the biggest project of their young core.
And you know, here's where I defend Julius Randle, because I think he's actually a pretty good man-to-man defender. It's just he's a terrible defensive IQ player in terms of playing team defense. He'll fall asleep all of a sudden. He'll lack energy and not run back. But when he's engaged, which is few and far between, he can actually laterally move very well, because he is LeBron-esque in size, Draymond Green-esque in size, and he's very fit, very chiseled, et cetera, et cetera. So the times we have seen him, you know, quote unquote, man up and actually engage his defender, if it's just a one-on-one situation, he's actually been pretty good. However, when the screen comes, or when someone backdoor cuts, or someone races out to the three-point line, that's when you see him kind of fall asleep. And it's really just the defensive awareness that has to improve. And I think at the very least, he has the proper foundation with Luke Walton's coaching staff to hopefully help him achieve that and provide some structure on defense where, the guys learn how to communicate better and whatnot. So I don't know if any of my guys want to add in anything else with regards to Julius and defense.
Yeah, I think pointing toward his IQ and his discipline is probably his biggest issue right now. Again, if you just watch him on the defensive end, when it comes to the team concepts, he does get lost. He's ball watching very frequently, and that could go back to his past. Maybe he was I haven't seen a whole lot of high school footage of him, but maybe he was used to dominating the paint, you know, on the defensive end. And in the NBA, that's just not going to be his role. I take a lot into account when it comes to body language. And I'll notice when he makes a mistake, he hangs his head, he doesn't hustle back. And at that point, there's no way you can catch up in the NBA. So, Jonathan, like you said, I think this coaching staff can definitely, you know, speak to him and shed some light on how he needs to improve. And I believe their communication is going to be very effective, and it will help take him to that level. Last year, you know, he got benched after however many games at the beginning of the year, and it's probably because of these reasons. And it was interesting because Byron Scott said, oh, we don't like his effort, so we're going to bring him off the bench, yet he was getting double-doubles. And it's like, okay, there's a difference between activity on the glass, things like that, and effort in terms of the mental aspect of the game. So I think that's where he needs to improve the most. And if he does, then sure, the potential is extremely high.
So would you trade Jordan Clarkson for Nerlens Noel? Just straight up. I don't think the contracts work, but maybe they do. I'm not quite sure. But would you trade Clarkson for Nerlens Noel straight up? And if you wouldn't, what is it like being so wrong?
You know, that was a very... that was a popular topic leading up until, you know, this past summer. And in every scenario, I would usually always say yes. I would love Nerlens Noel. I love his hustle. He is the prototypical, you know, new age Tyson Chandler for today's NBA. He can't hit a jump shot, but that's fine. He can defend pick and roll. He can defend the paint. Super athletic, perfect pick and roll alley-oop partner. So if you had asked me that, you know, before the summer, I would have said 100% always yes. But looking at the context of everything now, I think I'm actually leaning no. So you can call me wrong all you want, but I'm actually leaning towards no, just because at this point, given Jordan Clarkson's cheap ass contract and the fact that he has improved on defense, which was his number one flaw and Achilles heel, he's making $12 million. He's going to make $12 million for the next 4 years. To trade him for Nerlens Noel and the rights to max out Nerlens Noel as soon as this summer for $23 million when we already have Mozgov and an emerging mini Marc Gasol and Zubats. Zubats is really the main reason why I'm saying no at this point. And look, you know, Marc Gasol is no, I don't know what Nerlens Noel's like ultra hyped comparison would be, but I'm fine with seeing how Zubats eventually develops. Zubats will never be as athletic and mobile as Nerlens Noel, but he could be just as skilled and solid on defense as a guy like Marc Gasol or even, you know, Timofey Mozgov. So that's why I would say that's why I would lean no. But if you had asked me this before all the contracts were signed and before we learned Jordan Clarkson could actually play defense, I would have said 100% yes. So
you're high.
Sure.
What about the rest of you guys?
Oh, well, I'll step up to the punishment rack. I absolutely would not make that trade. I mean, especially hearing Luke Walton saying that, you know, he sees Jordan Clarkson's role being similar to Lamar Odom's when they won championships. And Luke Walton being a bench guy is going to have value for the bench. And knowing that a lot of great teams need that guy off the bench who can be that spark plug, who can be that playmaker, and also with his improved defense, he's a guy who's absolutely could be a catalyst for this team. So I'm going to say no. I think he's smart to hold on to Clarkson.
Tommy, Alan?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't do the trade either. My reasoning is mostly the contract, but I also think Jordan Clarkson, at some point it's like, are you going to take a positional need? And I get that Nerlens Noel does all this stuff and he can run the floor and, you know, he's probably going to be an elite defender ultimately at his position. But Jordan Clarkson, at some point you just have to take skill over what do I think I need? Like we have the stopgap filler center for the next few years in Mozgov. We have Zubats who's hopefully developing. We don't know what else is going to come in the, you know, in the next 3 years, but I guess I would, it's sort of like what Jonathan said. I wouldn't trade Clarkson or really many people on the team for except maybe Randall for the right to max Noel this or next summer, because we just don't know. Is Noel going to become like a passable player offensively, even if he can set screens and catch lobs and plays good defense? Like, does he have the basketball? Like, God knows what Philadelphia's been doing, or like what they've been doing is like an offensive scheme for the last few years, because I haven't really watched them, and obviously they've been so bad, so I'm not really sure what they're doing. But does he have the basketball IQ to be able to play in the type of offense that we want to run? I don't know. Maybe he does, but I'm not willing to spend that much on a guy who's, in my opinion, that unproven. We already have Clarkson locked in at a pretty bargain contract, even if he does come off the bench for the next 4 years. And this guy's he's like a explosive scorer. So if whether he's starting or coming off the bench, I think that, I don't know. The reason I feel it's hard for me to make this argument is because I think, like Jonathan, 2 years ago or a year ago, if you asked me this question, it would be like a no-brainer. But since he improves his defense so much, or Clarkson has, and at least what he's shown in the preseason, I think I definitely wouldn't make the trade at this point.
And, you know, to Tommy's point, it's all contextual based. Like, Luke Walton's system requires the big man to be able to pass the ball. And like Tommy said, I mean, this is not to say Nerlens Noel couldn't eventually turn into like a hyped up fusion of Tyson Chandler and Andrew Bogut. But right now he hasn't shown the ability to be offensively skilled and make the right reads and passes. But, you know, yeah. Alan?
Yeah, I would echo all the same. So I don't want to be redundant. I think Clarkson has improved both sides of his game so much this offseason. Time will tell over the course of the year if he can keep it up. But I like his upside at this point, and I do like the punch that he could bring off the bench eventually, if that's what it comes down to. He kind of is instant offense, instant energy. And if he hadn't made such significant strides defensively from a fundamentals point of view, then I would be a little bit more skeptical. And that's why I would keep him as well. And to echo the point about the contract, I just think that you want to hold on to him.
Chris, okay. Do you need to go to Starbucks with Sam Hinkie now?
Okay, well, I think I could convince you of the folly of your ways. I think you are being perhaps blinded by the purple and gold, but, you know, I Jordan Clarkson looks good. He's a solid player. Nerlens Noel is going to be a perennial defensive player of the year candidate, but, you know, there's a scoring punch off the bench. So I guess just sort of as we wind this podcast down, I wanted to mostly talk about this young core and also about Mozgov's contract. And we've done most of that. Who have we not really talked about out of these young guys? Maybe some sneaky guys who are crawling around the perimeter who you guys really feel good about who I haven't brought up. I feel like there's one European guy who might be brought up at some point in this list of guys who might be part of this long-term core, guys who have, you know, a lot of upside, who Lakers fans are excited about. Try to, you know, each of you, like, think of a different guy who, you know, has shown some flashes.
A different guy?
Yeah.
We're going to name the entire... I mean, it's for me, it's Zubats. I mean, I mentioned him, and he's the reason why I'm okay to pass on a guy like Nerlens Noel at this point, because he's already progressed farther than we had anticipated in terms of... He's so skilled offensively. I didn't know how skilled he was in the post. I didn't know how solid he was being able to shuffle his feet, because at first I thought he was a plodding big man, but actually he just looks that way because he's so big. But he can actually move his feet very well, and then... he can block shots because of his length, and it's not like an athletic, you know, super block like a guy like Tyson Chandler would make, but it's very effective still. So I really like what I've seen very early on in Zubats. It's clear that he looks clueless out there right now. He's clearly a rookie, but he's never going to not bring the energy, I think. So, and he seems like a really hard worker who, you know, coming from overseas, he's not taking anything for granted here. I mean, he loves the Lakers. He always loves the Lakers. Alan, I mean, it's your turn, Alan.
Okay, you can all just talk about Zubats.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like to talk about myself, but I love Lakers. I have many Lakers jersey, including my own.
There you go.
I thought he had a Bynum jersey.
He does. He has a Lamar Odom. He's got Kobe. He's got Meta World Peace. He has that one. Might have been Ron Artest at the time. But yeah, he's got like four Laker jerseys. Zubats. But yeah, besides Zubats... I like Tarik Black. I really think him being reunited with Luke Walton from their days in Memphis is going to make a difference. So far in the preseason, he's been very impactful while he's out there. Just like all the young guys, sure, he's going to get lost on defense from time to time. But, you know, we talked about this yesterday when we were recording. He was playing for Dwight Howard when he went down with Houston, and he was effective for them. So I think his energy, his athleticism, and even his ability to pass the ball has improved a lot. He's always going to have a bit of a size disadvantage because he isn't even 6'10", but I think he can make up for it with his length. I'm not exactly... Do you guys know how long his wingspan is? I know it's long. I just don't know exactly.
I think it's like 7'2" or 7'3".
7'2"?
Yeah. Yeah. It's remarkable. And I think he's a guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing this year. For some reason, he was in Byron Scott's doghouse last season, which made zero sense to me because he isn't like a low character guy. He's probably one of our highest character players. He has a very willing attitude. He's a team player. And that's one of the guys that I think is flying under the radar a bit for most.
Tommy? Sorry.
No, you go ahead, man.
Tommy, you there?
Yeah. So I think, I don't know if this counts because I mentioned Larry Nance Jr. before, but Larry Nance Jr., I don't know if he's flying under the radar per se. I think people know about him because he's got these flashy dunks now, but We don't know what this guy's upside is. He was a four-year college player, and I think the natural inclination is to be is to say, okay, well, we know who he's going to be. You know, his upside's limited. And then maybe on the flip side, you have people arguing, okay, well, what about Draymond Green? He was a four-year college player, and now he's something completely, you know, greater than any of us could have ever expected. I think the weird thing with Larry Nance Jr. is I can't remember where I read this, but at some point I read an article that suggested that he hasn't been playing basketball that like competitively for that long. I think he was 5'10" as a high school freshman or something like that. He was playing point guard for his team. And he wasn't that into it, and he almost quit because he had his, you know, he has Crohn's disease. But we don't know what this guy's upside is. You know, some guys, they are what they are at 19, and that's who they are for the rest of their lives. And some guys, they just keep getting better. And I think Larry Nance had sneakily like a really, really good season in a horrible offense. The fact that he was able to put up the numbers he did with the inconsistent playing time that he had, the fact that he was able to show a semi-consistent mid-range jumper, you know, he can be potentially at least very good, if not elite defender for his position. This is a guy that is making Randall semi-expendable in the sense that, yeah, Randall has, I think I agree that he has way more upside, but maybe you don't need to start a starting lineup of four guys like the Golden State Warriors who are just going to be all-star, all-pro type guys. You know, maybe that gives you some flexibility to move Randall and look for a center or something to mesh with the rest of this core. But I think Larry Nance Jr. could end up, I don't think any of us would be shocked if he had a better career overall than Randall, considering a lot of us are projecting, okay, Randall's either going to be near all-star level or maybe out of the league in 5 years. So I think Larry Nance is somebody to watch out for.
Well, I'm going to continue on the train of pushing Julius Randle out of the door.
Oh, geez.
A guy who very well we could wake up tomorrow and this guy could be cut. But I absolutely love Thomas Robinson and what he's brought on a complete non-guaranteed contract. I mean, a lot of people just thought he was just going to be an extra body for training camp. But, you know, when you talk about the different effort competitions that he's won in camp and limited minutes, you can see what he can do on the glass. I absolutely love what he brings, and he's coming as advertised out of Kansas, even though as the number 5 overall pick, it's really hard to live up to that hype. Kind of what we're seeing right now with Julius Randle at a 7th overall pick. Sometimes where you're slotted and when you end up getting picked may not match up to what you may actually bring to the table. But in the event that you continue to see these guys like Larry Nance Jr. and Tarik Black make a Julius Randle expendable, I think it'll be nice to see what a Thomas Robinson could actually develop into when you have a coaching staff that will actually invest in you. And, you know, I continue to pray that every day I wake up and he's on the roster, but we'll see if that E.G. Leon contract is the reason why he may be cut here in, you know, near future.
Oh, God. Man, he looks like a future all-star too, I think, you know?
E.G. and Lian?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, his contract could turn into a future all-star, so yeah, by transitive property, yes.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys talking Lakers. It was
Thank you. You
know, talking ball with you guys. I feel like we needed to chat, get all of our feelings out there, you know,
sure.
So no one thinks that their shows are bad because they have endearingly bad impersonations of NBA players. You know, that was a friendly quip from a fellow podcaster who enjoys your podcast. So, yeah, it was great talking Lakers with you guys. We already did plugs, you know. This has been the Lakers Legacy Podcast, guys. And, you know, I'm Chris Axman from Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Check it out. We're a featured network at blogtalkradio.com/ABPN and found at almightyballer.com. So, yeah, guys, here's to a Lakers core that in the future has Nerlens Noel starting in center.
Sure. Hey, Chris.
Oh my gosh.
Chris, thanks for having us on, man. I think you witnessed firsthand, though, that those impressions are actually pretty on point. So there you go. Fred, it was also a pleasure speaking with you. I had fun for the first time not having to host this crap and just being able to talk and have somebody else carry the load. So, Chris, thanks for that. And yeah, Lakers Legacy Pod at Lakers Legacy Pod, and catch us on SoundCloud, iTunes, etc., etc.
All right. Sweet. Oh, hey, Fred, talk about Flagrant Take,
yes.
Too.
Sure, Flagrant Take. Once again, we cover current events in the NBA. We are a weekly podcast, myself, my buddy Jim.
please feel free to like the fan page on Facebook, submit any comments, questions, and feel free to hit us up on Twitter that we gave you at the beginning of the show. But Legacy guys, thank you again for having me on, and Chris as well.
Of course. Later, guys.
Thank you.
And I'm here recounting all of my mistakes. Hang on my shoulders tonight.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.